Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 1st. I'm Ray Graff. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, so today we welcome two experts on suicide prevention, Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and Dr. Joseph Hunter of the Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center. It's a difficult topic to discuss, but an important one, and we welcome your calls. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll open the mailbag at some point in the show. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Dr. Tillman, Dr. Hunter, and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, so today we welcome two experts on suicide prevention. Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, is a board-certified clinical psychologist and a psychoanalyst. Dr. Tillman has presented and published on a wide variety of topics, including dissociation, psychosis, religion, identifying markers for acute risk of suicide, and the effect of patient suicide on clinicians. Dr. Joseph Hunter is a licensed clinical social worker who serves as suicide prevention coordinator for the Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center. He has served as a subject matter expert in the areas of substance use disorders and suicide prevention and has contributed to the development of specialized innovations in the areas of clinical practice, research, and treatment programming. If you have a question or a comment for today's program, do give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, that number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Jane Tillman and Dr. Joseph Hunter, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thank you, Ray. It's great to be here.
It's good to be with you in September, which is Suicide Prevention Month.
Now, Suicide Prevention Month is something that happens. It happens every year. And my question for you, and I'll ask you first, Dr. Tillman, and then we'll throw it to Dr. Hunter. Suicide being obviously a very personal thing, what can be done outside of the person who is considering this to prevent it?
There are certain things as a society that we can do. One of the most important findings is that if we can reduce access to lethal means, we could decrease the suicide rate. Research bears that out. So safe storage of firearms, firearm safety education, that sort of community health approach would go a long way reducing the suicide rate in this country. And that is, you know, a social issue more than a personal issue.
Right. But that doesn't get to the root of the problem. I mean, there is always a cliff. The gun isn't really the issue, right? It's the underlying issues. And I guess maybe we should talk about the risk factors and knowing those signs.
Well, there are many risk factors in the setting of substance abuse increases a risk for suicide. There's certain demographic, age, and membership in particular groups that are vulnerable to suicide. Depression is certainly linked with suicide, impulsivity, and a host of personal problems, financial stress, unemployment, loss of a romantic relationship. There are many things that can push a person in the direction of feeling like they don't have a good solution to the problems they're facing. And certainly in the pandemic, we are seeing people under tremendous strain from unemployment, loss of access to mental health care, loss of social connections.
You know, you mentioned the pandemic, and it's a remarkable amount of, I don't know how to describe it, whether it's stress or whether it's just an oppression on society as a whole. But have we seen an increase in suicides in the last 6 months?
I think those numbers aren't in yet. There are some indications that we will, in the long term, likely see an increase in suicides in the months and even years ahead related to the pandemic. One thing we know is from a CDC, Centers for Disease Control survey in June of this year, found that 40% of United States adults reported struggling with mental health or substance use issues during the pandemic. So the first, say, 3 months of the pandemic, 40%. That's a very high number of people struggling with mental health issues. Another thing that was noted was that in March of this year, there nearly 2 million Americans purchased new guns in March of 2020. This was up 85% from the firearms purchased in March of 2019. So that's a very worrisome indicator. There's other research from the New England Journal of Medicine that shows handgun ownership is a risk factor for suicide, especially immediately after purchasing a gun, and it remains elevated for the first year of ownership. So this is new data also published in June of 2020 that's worrisome, and we have to keep our eyes on that.
We are talking about suicide prevention today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, also joined from time to time by Dr. Joseph Hunter of Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center. You have not heard Dr. Hunter because we have been having some phone issues, and we'll see. Maybe we'll get him back on here in short order. So let's talk once again here for a minute before the first break here, Dr. Tillman, about these risk factors. And one that I saw on the list, which I find fascinating and rather hard to fathom, is a risk factor that is the local clusters of suicide. Where's the data on this, and tell us why this is a risk factor?
Well, I think there are large epidemiological studies. Dr. Madeline Gould at Columbia is one of the principal investigators who's shown that the way suicide clusters may be related to contagion. That is, we know that suicide also, a family history of suicide is also a risk factor for suicide. So when someone close to you dies by suicide, some of the people in that immediate social circle or through reading media reports may identify with suicide as a solution to a problem. And so a barrier to suicide may become lowered in the immediate aftermath, particularly a celebrity suicide, things that are reported in kind of graphic detail or in a sensationalistic way. We do see suicide clusters around that through the phenomena of what is thought to be contagion.
Now, would you lay a large blame for that on the media and poor coverage?
I think there's some data that certainly shows media coverage makes a difference, but I think instead of blame, I want to think about what can we do to strengthen our communities and strengthen our resilience in the face of suicide, so that people aren't so isolated and aren't so prone to seeing suicide as the best choice in terms of facing severe difficulties, personal or social or financial stressors.
We are talking today to Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center, and it is Suicide Prevention Month. Also with us is Dr. Joseph Hunter from Albany Stratton Veteran Affairs Medical Center, and I think the phones are working now. Dr. Hunter, are you with us?
Yes, I am with you. Thanks, Ray.
You know, we'll talk to you on the other side of the break, but it occurs to me, and I'm sure that the stats bear this out, that veterans have a unique set of challenges that, you know, suicide prevention experts such as yourself have to deal with. And so let's talk about that right after we take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation at home, it's 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined today by Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Dr. Tillman is a clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst. And we're also joined today by Dr. Joseph Hunter, a licensed clinical social worker who serves as suicide prevention coordinator for the Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center. And before the break, I mentioned the challenges veterans face and those unique pressures and tensions that can lead in some cases to suicide. Dr. Hunter, I wonder if you could expound on that.
Sure. Yeah, it's a complex answer to your question, but there's several things that I will mention. One of the obvious ones that had come up already is access to guns. Veterans typically, compared to civilians, just have more access to guns, and the majority of suicides, unfortunately, are by guns. So I think that is most definitely a factor. It also depends on what age you're looking at, what generation. Like, for example, the Vietnam era veterans. Are now in this older cohort where there's already a greater magnitude of suicides in the general population as well in the veteran population. What we see that is definitely more unique to veterans seems to be the transition points, especially transition out of the military in that first year. And I think if we looked closely at that, I think one of the things, and I hear this from veterans frequently, is that loss of sense of mission and purpose, coupled with a skill set that is very helpful and useful in the military, not all of which will translate into a good civilian job. And so that becomes a real challenge. So when I think about your question, I think about those things primarily. Some of the other things, though, that I think are important are things like exposure to death and dying. And not all of our veterans have that. So that's kind of a bit of a misnomer. Not everybody's a combat veteran. Much of what we do, much of what is done in the military is support roles. But many veterans who are at greater risk do have higher exposure to death and dying. And that is also a factor.
These are difficult things to change. How do you assess risk factors and how do you work in a positive way? It seems like a tough thing to do.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, it is and it isn't, because when you're in the work of suicide prevention, you're about helping people build their lives back together. And whether it's a job loss or a relationship breakup or whatever it is, the veteran has hit his or her low, and they're reaching out for help. And unfortunately, they don't always reach out for help, or we don't always know that they're reaching out for help. And this is where suicide prevention really can make a difference. But veterans, you have to understand, in the military are trained to help each other and help others and put themselves second. And it's a retraining process in many ways to help them realize that, hey, listen, sometimes you have to be the one to reach out and get that help and support that you need. So as providers, as social workers and psychologists, it's really an honor and a privilege to be able to help this population and be there for them. And guide them to making decisions and finding resources to help build their lives back together. So although I can understand why you might think that it's, kind of like this difficult topic, it's actually very important and fulfilling work to work with this population.
We're joined today by Dr. Joseph Hunter of Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center and Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Let's go to the phones and Joan in North Egremont, Massachusetts. Joan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm interested in understanding the impact of pharmaceuticals on mental health and suicide. For example, I took some statins because of high cholesterol, and the first one I had terrible muscle aches, and then I took another pill, and it affected my mental health, and I became really paranoid. So of course I stopped that pharmaceutical, but I'm concerned about the impact of pharmaceuticals on suicide.
All right, Dr. Tillman, you go first.
I'm not a physician, so you're hearing the perspective of someone who's familiar with the research literature
there are certain medications that are associated with an increased experience of suicidality or suicide. And as soon as the FDA understands more about that, they typically issue a black box warning for that medication. I think some of this knowledge about the relationship of medications to suicide comes, unfortunately, after a body of evidence or scientific knowledge has accumulated that bears out the relationship between the medication and suicide. But that's the extent, I think, of my knowledge on that subject. But there is certainly black box warnings for medications associated with suicidal thinking.
Dr. Joseph Hutter, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, well, I think Dr. Tillman's quite articulate and on the money as far as what she is describing with the black box warnings, and also that, you know, we are not medical doctors, so we're not going to say too much about that. We do know that certain pharmaceutical medications can contribute to greater risk, for example, benzodiazepines. But I don't really think that's what your listener's question was about. It was just more about medications in general, including medications that, you know, treat other medical illnesses that may have that side effect. And I personally don't, or professionally don't know a lot of, now I don't have a lot of knowledge in that particular area, but I do know some of the medications like benzodiazepines can be addictive. And we know addiction is a risk factor for, you know, suicide as well. So,
Joan, you want to follow up?
Well, I didn't realize because it would require some knowledge about the medications.
Right.
But I would imagine that in clinical trials, they would find out some of this. But it just seems to me there might be some connection, even, you know, with mental illness and suicide of the treatments. So I guess it's a question for a pharmacist or a medical doctor.
Perhaps another show. Yes, Jane, Joan, thank you very much for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Joseph Hutter of Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center and Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center. Dr. Tillman, as far as statistics and the rates of suicide in this country, have they been relatively static over the past 80, 100 years, or are they on the increase or decrease?
They're on the increase. In 1999, the Surgeon General declared suicide a public health emergency. And unfortunately, since 1999, between 1999 and 2019, the suicide rate in this country has gone up by about 34%. Which is in contrast to the rest of the world. World Health Organization statistics show that worldwide the rate of suicide is going down, but it's really quite a public health emergency in the United States right now. And you probably read numerous reports about that in the popular press and in the newspaper, but it's particularly rising these days. We know more about the LGBTQ population. About the 2020 survey results from the Trevor Project, which is a suicide prevention organization aimed at LGBTQ youth, show that 40% of LGBTQ respondents to this survey had seriously considered attempting suicide in the past 12 months. And more than half of transgender and non-binary youth have seriously considered suicide. So that's a very vulnerable population. The Congressional Black Caucus also had an emergency task force on black youth suicide and mental health in the last 2 years. And the findings of that report include that the suicide rate among black youth has been increasing faster than in any other racial or ethnic group.
We're joined today by Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center and Dr. Joseph Hutter of Albany Stratton Veteran Affairs Medical Center on this edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, September National Suicide Prevention Month. But when it comes down to it, and I'll go back to this question again that I asked Dr. Tillman, I'll ask Dr. Hutter, what can the general population do to help prevent suicide?
All right, and that is the golden question, and it's a great question. So I'm going to just take my time and make some suggestions. I think the first thing is to be aware that this is a real problem. I don't think we need to blow it out of proportions. Not everybody who has a bad day or loses a job or whatever awful thing comes their way, all of a sudden becomes suicidal. It is unique, but it does happen. And so I think there has to be an awareness and an acceptance that suicide is something that is going on, and that certain people are at greater risk, and that there are clear warning signs that someone might be in trouble. And it's important for anybody to really recognize, hey, that person doesn't seem his or herself. Their behavior is a little off. We know that these other things are going on in their life. Let me check in with them. The VA's theme this year is to be there, meaning you don't need special training to show someone that you care, to step in and say, you know what, you're going through a lot right now. Are you okay? And just have that conversation. Use some open-ended questions, questions that can't be answered with just yes or no, to start the dialogue around, you know, how they're dealing with things. And then everybody can be helpful by knowing what resources are there. At the very least, knowing that there's a crisis line number, 800-273-8255, that anybody can call at any time for support, especially not only for themselves, but for someone else. If you're worried about someone and you want to get some help or consultation and you don't know who to call, you can call that crisis line number. The VA has its own unit that responds to these calls. Their staff is near, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 now that manage these calls that come in. And, you know, it's spouses, it is, you know, family members of veterans, because they're concerned about a service member or veteran who's struggling with something, and they're worried about suicide, or they're worried about their mental health, or they're worried they're going to, you know, drink themselves to death, or do something that they can't undo in some way. And so what everybody can do is have this level of awareness and acceptance, recognize warning signs, be willing to start a conversation, and know the resources to connect people to help.
But what do you do when you try to initiate a conversation and that person, he or she wants no part of having a conversation?
Well, you know, that's a great question. You know, I have to be honest with you, it's usually the opposite. People who are hurting or struggling want to be heard. They want someone to care. Now, veterans will be the first ones to say, hey, listen, I'm good. I'm all right. No problem. They'll worry about someone else. But the truth is, if you get, you know, beyond that and say, no, really, come on, something's going on. Let me help you talk this out. You know, take that extra moment can make a huge difference. That often, you know, you will get some resistance up front, and that's normal. People, you know, are nervous and they don't necessarily want to talk about what's really going on. And again, a lot of people who are struggling are not going to become suicidal. They may just need some short-term counseling, some help. They might be dealing with a depression or anxiety disorder that will respond very well to treatment, but they don't necessarily know that. So being patient and understanding and showing a lot of respect, especially when it comes to veterans and service members, because they have done so much to serve our country and they deserve that at a minimum, is that level of respect and just patience and understanding. And usually they do want to talk about it, and that information will come forth.
Dr. Joseph Hunter is here from Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center, and Dr. Jane Tillman of Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge. It is Suicide Prevention Month. Dr. Tillman, you have done research on the identifying markers for acute risk of suicide. And we've talked about the risks. We've talked about the warning signs. Are there cases where literally there are no warning signs?
There are a few cases where there are no warning signs. We did a study where we asked people, interviewed people who had survived a near-lethal attempt. And one of the questions we asked them is, as they reflected back on the hours leading up to that near-lethal attempt, could someone who knows you very well have known that you are at imminent risk of suicide? The majority of our interview participants said no. They did not think that others outside of them could have seen a change in behavior. Now, there are certain changes in behavior that are known to be associated with suicide, such as giving away one's possessions, talking about killing oneself, using drugs or alcohol more than usual, acting differently. Those are some behavioral signs one can see. But there are also people who conceal or their pain remains quite hidden to those around them. And so suicide often comes as a shock, even to people who know someone very well.
You know, Dr. Hunter, this applies to the general population in America, but probably more so to vets. It seems that in this country, toughness is prized, and you have a stiff upper lip, and you're tough, and you tough things through. Are there times where, my God, you didn't see this coming, or those around those people did not see that coming?
Yeah, I think so. But you have to remember that suicide occurs within a context of a lot of things going on in a person's life. So, for example, maybe someone has a new cancer diagnosis, or they are going through a divorce, or they have a custody battle going on. And these are very real things that are going on. So it's not like all of a sudden somebody's, you know, dead and it's like, oh, wow, what happened? It's usually there's a context to that. There's things going on in their lives. And for any of us, we need extra support and attention and, you know, lean into our support systems at those times. We need to be able to lean into our own coping skills and be able to manage things. And not everybody has those coping skills. And some people don't have those support systems in place. And so that's where it really becomes more of a challenge. And that's where it really is incumbent upon the supports that are there to recognize, hey, this person is going through a difficult time. We don't have to wait till they're at that moment, hours before they're contemplating suicide, to say, listen, he must be struggling or she must be struggling. This is a difficult time. Let me just be a friend and be there for him and just, you know, go out and have a cup of coffee, you know, and just have a frank discussion about what's going and how he or she is dealing with it. And I think that can go a long way.
It makes sense. We're joined today by Dr. Joseph Hunter of Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center and Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center. And the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 at 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. This is Vox Pop. I'm going to give you another number in a moment. That's the number you can call if you want to join the conversation. And that number, if I can remember it, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We'll be back, and we'll just take a quick break. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, so we welcome two experts on suicide prevention to the program today, and we welcome Dr. Joseph Hunter of Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center and Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Peter is in Castleton. Peter, you're on. Hello, Peter. Oh, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Ah, you're on.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to be sure that people were aware. There's a program called Mental Health First Aid. It is offered by several organizations, especially the National Association for the Mentally Ill, and I think the New York State chapter offers it. And it is specifically designed to help address, prevent suicide and other major behavioral health issues.
All right, Peter. Dr. Tillman, would you like to comment?
Yes, that's a very well-respected program. My colleague, Ms. Lee Witroba here, and Bertha Conley, two of my colleagues at Austin Riggs, regularly teach mental health first aid in Berkshire County to various groups. And that educates the lay public about suicide and how to talk to someone they're worried about and recognize the signs of someone in distress, potentially suicide distress.
Peter, thank you very much for the call. Our number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. Dr. Jane Tillman and Dr. Joseph Hunter join us today. Terry is in Amherst. Terry, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I wondered who qualifies. I'm a volunteer on a suicide hotline, and I'm only aware of Good Samaritans. And what kind of training would a layperson receive before they were allowed to take calls?
Okay, you the first question you asked broke up, so just ask that one again.
Who would qualify to become a volunteer on a suicide hotline?
Gotcha. All right, Dr. Hunter first.
Okay, so the VA has trained staff who staff their crisis line 24/7. And however, that 800-273-8255 is staffed by volunteers primarily who are trained in that as you kind of apply, if you will, for that volunteer work, they would train you as part of that process. And I believe it's United Way, at least it used to be. Dr. Tillman, do you know offhand if that's still United Way? I know they run one of the crisis line programs locally.
I do not know how people who wish to volunteer access that training, but that's a very good question.
All right. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, once again, is 800-273-8255. And Terry, maybe you could do some research online into the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline and find out the answer to that question. But thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551 on Vox Pop. And we're joined today by Dr. Jane Tillman and Dr. Joseph Hunter. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. We go to Marie in Charlton. Marie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My son, Jack, is heading to the Olympics last year in September, 4 days after his birthday, which was September 20th. At the age of 24, he committed suicide in the athletic house where he was staying, where he was a senior member. He evidently had concussions in the support. And he also, since I found out, was extremely exhausted from training, competing around the world. So like a perfect storm, it seems. He was a very normal, actually very empathetic person, which might have hurt him in this sport. Extremely well-liked, very popular, traveling around the world, living his life, living the life he wanted. But the last year, the stress of attaining to the Olympics period, I think there were enough supports. And also the inability, like you were saying, to express oneself or say something's going on because of their tough guys in the sport. It was judo, which is a tough guy sport, even for the women. So I'm sharing this because I would like change. I think there will be change, but I would like this not to happen again if possible.
Marie,
thank you.
I'm sorry for your loss. Would you like to talk to Dr. Tillman here for a minute?
Sure.
Hi, Marie. I also am sorry for your loss. There is a growing movement of people who are survivors of suicide loss, recognizing the sort of sadness and potential trauma of losing someone by suicide. And there's actually an International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day that's in November, and there are also support groups for people who have lost someone for suicide. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has a list of local support groups, and they have a program called Healing Conversations, which is a personal support network for suicide loss survivors. Those are some resources for people who have had someone close to them or been affected by the death of someone by suicide.
Marie, thank
you. Thank you. I just wanted to address the fact that not so much for myself, but for my son and people that compete or in competitive sports, how there are problems here. And as a country, we're very competitive. Sports are our religion, essentially. And I feel that there has to be a conversation about that.
Marie, thank you very much for the call. And once again, we're sorry for your loss. Your connection is not the best, but we do. We got your message very strongly, and thank you so much for the call. The number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Joseph Hunter is here from Albany Stratton Veterans Affairs Medical Center, and Dr. Jane Tillman of the Austin Riggs Center. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Do either of you doctors have any data on the percentage of those who commit suicide or attempt suicide who have substance abuse disorders? Hearing nothing, I guess.
Yeah.
Jane, you want to give it a shot?
The statistic from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is that about 90% of those who have died by suicide had a diagnosable mental health condition at the time of their death. And I think that the number for substance abuse or substance use disorder in that context is available. I don't have it at my fingertips.
Dr. Hunter.
Yeah. Well, you're asking for an exact percentage that have the substance use disorder.
A rough percentage.
And I don't know. I don't have that off the top of my head either. But I do know that the stat, the 90% have an underlying mental health or substance use disorder. So we know this. It's high. And I want to specifically address alcoholism because a substantial proportion of suicides are alcohol inbound. And why is alcohol an issue? Alcohol is a drug of sorts. It's a legal drug, but it's a drug, and it has some effects that can lead to increased risk. So, for example, it's a depressant on the body. It irritates and it sedates, and there's a stimulating effect initially, but the ultimate effect is that it is a depressant. It's a sedative hypnotic, but it has a depressing effect. But alcohol also impairs your judgment. It also decreases your inhibitions, which is your ability to stop yourself from doing something impulsively. Mm-hmm. So you take that combination and then you add to it a new life stressor or crisis. And that is the combination that really can become explosive, if you will, in terms of a combination where somebody becomes a greater risk. So regardless of what that exact percentage is, which I don't know off the top of my head, we do know that there is a strong correlation between alcohol use disorder and increased risk for suicide. And it's those mechanisms that I talk about, that lack of inhibition or that lost inhibition, the poor judgment, the overall depressing effects in combination with, and also, of course, alcohol can make you more emotionally labile, more out of control in a sense of your emotions. All of that can come together and increase risk for suicide.
Our number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. And let's go to Donna in Greenfield. Donna.
Hi there. I was listening to y'all talk about how people can become trained in recognizing symptoms through mental health first aid. And one of the callers had asked about whether or not she could be certified as somebody who's a layperson out in the community. I know that having been involved in this program in the past, if she goes online and Googles mental health first aid, you can go to their website and you can locate a course that's being offered for you, and the community can participate in that manner. A person can choose between a number of different kinds of courses that they offer. There are some that are tailored towards people in their workplace. There are some that are tailored towards supporting youth and recognizing youth symptoms. And then someone can, if they're so inclined, become certified in how to become a trainer themselves in their community. So I just wanted to volunteer that. So again, Google mental health first aid. That's the main thing. And you can look at their resources on their website.
Donna, thank you very much. Do either of you want to comment on that?
No, just to thank Donna for providing that resource for the woman who called in earlier looking for a route to become a volunteer.
All right. Thank you very much.
Ray, I lost.
Go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
I was going to say, yeah, I'm sorry. I wanted to mention also that the VA has a number of outreach activities that we do, and one of them is an innovation that we developed here in Albany that's part of the VA's Dynamic Diffusion Network, which means we're basically gearing up to roll this out nationally. And the purpose of the program is to engage community leaders, faith-based leaders and other community leaders in a kind of a train-the-trainer model where we have a program where we hold events. Lately, we've been doing them online, where we invite in people within different counties, and we train them in a model that's, you know, similar to the mental health first aid, with some, you know, cue cards that they walk away with and posters that they can use, that really empowers them to know how to have that conversation. But the point of the training is not necessarily just for the audience that comes, but also to share that training with others, in the form of a half hour video that, you know, outlines all the different steps and how to talk to somebody and shows a vignette example of how to actually carry that out. So the VA is actually providing a very similar training that's hands-on, that comes in this kind of a nice packaged form, if you will, that somebody can easily kind of learn and then apply using these tools that we provide along with it.
Dr. Tillman.
Yes.
What would you, in a perfect world, hope to accomplish, short of changing society completely? What can we get done in National Suicide Prevention Month?
In National Suicide, I think raising awareness, educating the public, letting people know what the issues are, encouraging people to have conversations with someone if they're worried about them, know how to access resources for help. I think those in the next 30 days would be important goals.
All right, let's grab one more call here before we wrap up. Russell in New Paltz. Russell, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am a writer, and I've had two suicides in my family, and I want to write something about one of them. I've obtained the police report of the incident, and I'm having difficulty getting the medical records from therapists and other people regarding this incident, and I was wondering, is there something I can do to obtain those records?
Well, I don't know if our guest can answer that one. Either of you have any answer for that?
I think that's a legal question, of sorts, and I think unless someone is the executor of an estate, they don't have access to medical records of a deceased person, is my understanding. But, again, I'm not an attorney. That's a legal question.
Well, I am the executor, and I'm also the father of my son committed suicide.
I'm sorry for your loss. I think it's a legal question.
Yeah.
Sorry, Russell.
Okay, I thought I'd try.
Well, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. You know, it's a tough topic. We do this program once a year and probably should do it more often. But a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And so quickly, in the last 2 minutes here, Dr. Hunter, give us a reason for people to engage on this topic.
Yeah, you know what? We've heard a couple of callers come in and talk about their children. And we also have heard our callers talk about how it was a surprise. And I want to emphasize the point that this could be your brother, your mother, your sister, your neighbor, your coworker, even your spouse potentially, or your child who is dealing with something. And it's really important to be aware of the fact that suicides do happen. It's a real thing. And that, you know, being cognizant of the fact that certain things can lead someone down that path, not all the way down, but at least getting in that line of thinking, like the contagion that we talked about, especially with adolescents. But there are warning signs and indicators that we can pay attention to, and then to take that next step and connect with that person and connect them with resources. That's the piece that we have to be willing to do. And so the difficult conversation is important to have, because it hopefully gives people the confidence to say, listen, I know this is difficult. I don't really want to deal with this. I don't want to talk about it. It is uncomfortable, but this could be someone I love and care about deeply who is no longer with us. And, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I can tell you from my own experience that people who attempt suicide and live are really glad they're alive. In that moment of crisis, suicide seems like the best option. But ultimately, they're not thinking clearly. They're like horses with blinders on. They're not seeing the bigger picture. And so that's why it's so important that everybody really gets involved and be willing to support, you know, service members and veterans and others who are demonstrating those warning signs and get them the services and help they need.
All right. Well, we will have to wrap up here, but we have about 15 seconds. Dr. Jane Tillman, you had mentioned that the rates of suicide have increased in this country. Are you optimistic that that will change?
It's changed worldwide, and I am optimistic that with the proper steps, increased access to care, addressing the issue of stigma, which I think is one reason people don't like to talk about suicide and mental health issues is because of the issue of stigma. If we address those things, I think we can lower the rate in this country.
Well, thank you both very much for being here. That's it for today's program. Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarriers and fabricators used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Merritt Bookstore, Millbrook, open for customers with a full range of books to support online learning and play with the Merritt at Home selections online, merrittbooks.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, now open for takeout Tuesday through Saturday, 7 to 4. We thank all those in the trenches. Please distance responsibly, henyonbakery.com. Well, once again, thanks to Dr. Tillman and Dr. Hunter for joining us today. As a resource for those in need, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7, 800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. Provides free and confidential support for people in distress, prevention, and crisis resources. Once again, thanks for being here on the show today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. And Amber Sickles took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Pets and Vets. Stand by now for the Book Show.